Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Bill Saubert, author of the new novel, The Girl with the Green Lipstick. Bill, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Jeff, thanks. It's a real pleasure to be here with you and your listeners, and I look forward to our chat.
Absolutely. Well, if someone listening hasn't yet heard about your new novel, The Girl with the Green Lipstick, how would you describe the novel?
Well, I would say it's a cautionary tale, and it's a psychological thriller. I don't know, you know, in my experience, when I tell people about what happened to me, I can't tell you how many people say, oh, my God, I met a narcissist, or I was involved with a psychopath, or it's remarkable. And so what we don't realize is these people who are very evil live in our society. They look like us. They talk like us. They're charming. They're sexy. They're fun. By the way, did I mention sexy? What I would say about the book is I try to describe what it's like getting drawn into a relationship like this, and then, in my case, how a successful exit worked. And then there were other things around my story that I didn't know at the time. As an example, the woman I married, who in this book and in reality, is a repeat offender felon, and she committed crimes against me as well. And It went from being just an emotional tale to a real thriller in terms of who this person is and how they behave.
Well, you mentioned that the novel is based on your own experience. Can you tell us a little bit about what did happen to you?
Sure, be happy to. So for 17 years, I was married to the love of my life. She's the Tracy character in the book. And that woman got ovarian cancer and fought it valiantly and then died in 2014 of ovarian cancer in my arms in our bed at home. And I was really distraught. And for about 16 months afterwards, I wore my wedding band because I still felt like I was married. And so finally, a neighbor's wife said to me, you know what? You need to go online. You're a young, healthy man. You're active. You're fit. I know your wife would have wanted you to have another life. So you should find somebody. So I went online, and the first person that I saw online, I encountered online, who I thought I'd want to get to know, meet, turned out to be, in the end, the girl with the green lipstick. And she played kind of hard to get, and then we finally got together. And then she played hard to get some more. And finally, I said, look, I think the reason you're being so coy about all this is that you don't think I'm serious about wanting to to marry you, and I do. And so we got married, and she lived in Albuquerque, which is about 50 miles south of Santa Fe, where I live. And she said, well, I'm not living up there. My son is down here, and she worked for me. I'd hired her as my general manager of a 5-store retail operation. And I said, okay, well, then I'll buy a house in Albuquerque and we'll split our time. We'll spend a couple of nights a week down there, a couple of nights a week in Santa Fe, and a couple of nights a week doing our own thing. I play tennis in the evening one or two nights a week. And so I said, look, you've got stuff you're involved with, so I think that'll work out. And she was agreeable to that. So we got married. I bought this house. And within a month, she moved her lover into the house. So I thought, that's problematic. And then she sued me for sexual harassment, and I went to my attorney, and she said, well, there's absolutely no legal basis for a spouse suing their other spouse that they work for sexual harassment. But, you know, we have to address it. Let's get this thing taken care of. She said, but by the way, things here don't seem to add up. Do you mind if I do a background check on this woman? I said, no, that's fine. I never felt the need to, but, you know, go ahead. She called me a few days later, my attorney, and she said, I think you ought to come to her office. There's something I think you need to see. And when I showed up in their conference room, there were on the conference room table about 300 pages of this woman that I'd married, her criminal record. I mean, everything from speeding tickets to 3 felony convictions for embezzlement. Sorry, 1 federal conviction for mail fraud. And the fact that she'd spent she'd spent a year and a half in New Mexico in prison out of a 10-year sentence. She'd been on parole. She'd committed crimes against me while she was on parole. This was all a bit of an eye-opener for me. By now, I had gone to a counselor, and after our first session, the counselor said to me, she held up her hand and she said, Bill, you need to get rid of this woman. She's horrible. She's going to destroy you in every way she can. Call your attorney today. And it was just a bucket of cold water poured over my head. And so at any rate, the rest of the book describes some other things that occurred. But at any rate, that is so about 60% of the book is true. About 40% I just had to invent.
Wow. I'm wondering, how did you decide to turn this into a novel as opposed to kind of a memoir or nonfiction book?
Well, the problem is a lot of the early childhood things that occurred with this woman I married, I don't know for sure what the facts are. She had alluded to some things, and so I did research on the behaviors of narcissists. I did research on the behaviors of sociopaths and psychopaths, and I just embroidered some things. So because I couldn't say factually things about her time in prison, her younger years, I know for sure she was adopted. That she did tell me, and I confirmed that. So there were some things that I knew from her early life. She told me at one point that the father of her first serious boyfriend, by whom I took her to mean the first boy she had sex with, she said his father propositioned her when she was in high school. And so I just took that and ran with it. And so I had some little snippets of facts or things that she had told me, but I felt because I couldn't really work with all facts that I should fictionalize it, which I did.
Sure. And I'm curious, had you always wanted to write a novel before this experience happened to you and you decided to write The Girl with the Green Lipstick?
No, I have to say, I thought short fiction was going to be where I would spend my productive writing time. I was a businessman, and I've written about a dozen articles for trade publications around things as esoteric as financial risk management. I started telling, you know, people would say, when are we going to meet your wife? And I'd say, well, I'm married, but I don't really have a wife. She lives in Albuquerque in a house I bought with her lover. And they'd go, oh, my God. And so, you know, the more you tell people about what's going on, the more they kind of say, boy, you should write this down. So one night I was at dinner and bumped into a husband and wife couple who are friends. And she is a published author. And I started telling him about what had been going on in my life. And she said, oh, my God, Bill, you have a book. You need to send me an outline. And so I did about a 20-page outline and sent it to her. And she said, oh, flesh this out. This is a book. So, and she, by the way, her first novel sold over 500,000 copies. So she knows what she's talking about. She had self-published it, and then it got purchased by Hachette Filippacci, and they made it a trade pub, and so and promoted it, and it ended up selling a whole lot of copies. But my book is still self-published. It's available on the Amazon Kindle platform, both in hard copy and ebook form. And but you know, the more I, and it was fun. It was also therapeutic. I have to say, I was working with a counselor, just trying to work through all the anxiety I had about what was going on with this woman. And the deal is, narcissist psychopaths really want to keep you off balance. Their fun is making sure you can't figure out what's going to happen next. And they can be sweet and charming and loving and sexy, and then they'll just cut you to watch you bleed. And so what happens is, and I've said this before, the highs and lows emotionally I experienced with this woman were the highest and lowest I've ever experienced with any human, male or female, ever. So you crave the highs and you try to endure the lows. And so what makes it more addictive is the randomness of the kindness. And so you just, you know, you're like a dog waiting for a pet. You know, you just stand there and hope it happens.
Intermittent reinforcement.
You're so grateful, you know. And so at any rate, once they get their hooks into you, and here's the other part. You know, I'm a smart guy. I've been successful in business in other ways. And people say to me, how could this happen to you? And I said, well, did you ever see the movie The Big Chill? There's a scene in that movie between the Kevin Kline character and the Jeff Goldblum character. And they're talking about what is the most important contributor to the human condition. And the Kevin Kline character says, that's easy, sex. And the Jeff Goldblum character says, nope, it's something else. And the Kevin Kline character is really skeptical and he says, no, it's sex. And the Jeff Goldblum character said, no, it's rationalization. And the Kevin Kline character says, are you kidding? And the Jeff Goldblum character says, have you ever gone a week without a rationalization? And so I was rationalizing bad behavior by somebody that I was in love with. And you can rationalize away a lot of bad behavior. And it took this counselor to kind of pour a bucket of cold water over me and say, what are you doing? You know, what in the world? Why are you allowing somebody to destroy you? And, you know, you take a step back and you go, holy cow, you're right. And, but you know, I mean, look, when she moved her lover into the house and locked me out, changed the locks, changed the code on the garage door, you know, I grew up a hardscrabble life in Montana. And that kind of behavior isn't even unusual. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, and so, you know, look, I have very dear friends who had affairs for years.
Sure.
Got back together with their spouse. And this guy was a Mexican national. He's a handyman. And I'm sure there were certain things about him that she liked and wanted. But he couldn't support the lifestyle that she'd want. And I figured eventually she's going to come back. And we'll, you know, when you get to the other side of the ravine, you look back and go, what ravine? You know, holy cow, that was, you know, we're on the other side now. Let's live it up.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sure. Well, have you thought about writing a second novel?
I'm in the midst of writing another novel. It's not a continuation of this story. I may wait a little bit to write a second novel about this set of circumstances, but I am in the midst of writing a second novel.
That's great. Well, what writing advice would you offer for those who are thinking about writing their own stories or novels?
Well, I would say write what you know. I mean, write what your experience is, whether it's good or bad. This current novel that I'm writing is tentatively titled The Book I Didn't Write. And it's about a book that the love of my life wrote. And aside from putting my fingers on the keyboard, I really did a lot of the writing of that book with her, but I didn't write it. She wrote it, but it's fun. You have to enjoy writing. You have to be. The advice I'd give is to devote a certain amount of time a day to either making notes or writing pages. I would say take a few days off when you get sick of it talk to people about hard, difficult passages and how you'd like to portray those. I think getting input from friends is terrific. And then in the end, have somebody edit it who is not a friend or relative. Pay somebody to edit your work. It's really good to have somebody who's dispassionate about your work help to kind of trim it up and tighten it up, because you'll get really defensive with friends when they offer your editorial comments, and then they'll be sensitive about telling you the truth. Whereas sure. A third party who doesn't really know you and whom you're paying for their professional services, they'll give you their best professional advice. And frankly, that's terrific because it's hard to be objective about your brainchild, you know. And I think I have had friends who've written books and have asked me to read them before they've been edited. And they say, so what do you think? And I say, well, I think you need an editor. And they get a little offended. And I say, look, you know, it's wonderful. These are your words, but it's not a book. You know, it's not a compelling story, as compelling as it could be. And that's what editing is helpful for. And I think that's about the best advice I could give somebody. But start out. I mean, the Chinese are right. The journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step, right? So sit down at your computer, open up your word processing software, and start writing. Put a few
That's
words.
Great. Well, what novels or nonfiction books have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Oh, gosh. I'm a Joe Nesbo fan. Nonfiction, I like history. I've read histories of Teddy Roosevelt. read the biography of Margaret Thatcher. It's funny, I was a partner with McKinsey & Company, a consulting firm. And the way you say somebody isn't very smart is you say they don't write very well. And the corollary of that is they don't read. I was in a group of partners at a partners meeting, and a guy who'd just been made a partner who was a real, he was full of himself. He looked at me and said, so, Bill. He was British. He said, what do you read? And I knew that was code. And so I told him what I was reading. And he said, "Oh, thick, Sean," as if it was dirty.
Right.
And you know, since then, I have very purposely alternated fiction and nonfiction reading. But at any rate, I thought, you little SOB, you know, you're, yeah, and I'm now going to reel off the past 5 nonfiction books I've just read, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, where can people find you online if they want to learn more about you and your debut novel, The Girl with the Green Lipstick?
So you can go to Bill Saubert, that's spelled BillSaubert.com. I'm also on Instagram, and I do have a Facebook account, although I don't update that very frequently. But BillSaubert.com has background about me. I don't know if you know, Jeff, but I also produce and moderate a political opinion show on the local NPR affiliate. I'm also involved with 2 local not-for-profits, I'm a businessman. I own and operate 6 retail stores, and then I have a wholesale business that makes custom corrugated boxes for shipping, and so that's broad stroke who I am.
That's great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Bill Saubert, author of the new novel, The Girl with the Green Lipstick. The novel is on sale now, so go buy a copy. And Bill, thanks for doing this interview.
Jeff, it's been a real pleasure chatting with you, and I hope your listeners have enjoyed it. I've certainly enjoyed chatting with you.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.